Welcome to the Mo Money, Mo Progress podcast. We bring you interviews with amazing people who share advice about how to make more money and manage what you got.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Mo Money, Mo Progress. My name is Gwen, the eldest and wisest of the sister pack. Just kidding. I'm the oldest, but definitely not the wisest. It's probably Karen. Today, we have an awesome interview. I recently chatted with Stephanie O'Connell of The Broke and Beautiful Life. So Stephanie is a huge inspiration. Right now, she's living in New York City and pursuing her dream of being an actress. But as you know, as you could assume, being an actress in New York is not easy. You know what I'm saying? Like, you need to find different ways to make money and be able to fund the dream. And as it turns out, Stephanie is now a millennial finance expert. So she started blogging about her adventures in money, which she chronicles on The Broke and Beautiful Life. And she's actually recently come out with a book sharing all about her journey in money. She's been featured on major media like The Wall Street Journal, The Huffington Post, and Forbes, and she's a freelance writer for publications like Yahoo News, USA Today, US News and World Report, and various other publications. And honestly, she's just getting started. So if you're in a place right now where you have a really creative project that you want to do for your life, or you really want to pursue for your full-time career, you'll get a lot of inspiration from Stephanie about how you can fund that dream. So here we are, my interview with Stephanie O'Connell.
Hello, Stephanie. Welcome to the show.
Hiya. Thank you for having me.
It is a thrill. We love to have New Yorkers on the show.
I'm glad to be one.
Yes. Well, Stephanie, as you know, we like to start every show with some rapid fire questions to get to know some of the, you know, the quirkier side of yourself, or questions that you might not be asked every day. So here we go. You ready for it?
I'm so ready.
Thank God. Okay. So what is your greatest extravagance?
I would say travel for sure. I'm a junkie when it comes to traveling.
I love it. Got to experience life.
Absolutely.
What is the first thing that comes to mind when you hear the word money?
Oh, so much potential. So much potential for buying so many things and experiencing so many things. I love money. It doesn't scare me. Not having it scares me.
Yes. Oh, I love that. I love that. What is your favorite tool or financial tool or app that you might use?
I use an app called Personal Capital, which kind of aggregates all of my accounts, because I had lots of credit cards and lots of checking accounts and savings accounts and investment accounts for different purposes. And I just sometimes need one place where I can get a full financial picture. And that's where Personal Capital really comes in handy.
Nice. Shout out. What was your first freelance job ever?
Oh, man. I think it was on a website called C-Debt Run, and I got paid like $30 to write 500 words every 2 weeks, which is not much compared to what I make now.
No, I feel like, you know, that would cover maybe lunch in New York.
Maybe.
But I mean, at the time, it's got to be, oh my God.
I was like, people are going to pay me for my thoughts. I was so excited.
Totally. What is something that you patiently saved up for to buy?
Yeah, that's a good one. I guess I'd have to say my computer. You know, I live on my computer now as a writer and a freelancer and an entrepreneur. And so it really was important to me to have something that was functional and that was user-friendly. And so I got a Mac, which is like the most expensive thing ever. And it took me a long time to save up, but I'm so glad. No buyer's remorse at all.
I was in the same position where I was like, oh God, but my computer works fine. But then you get a Mac and just the game changes.
Oh, absolutely. I'm on this baby all the time. It comes everywhere with me.
Oh, I know. What is your favorite financial book or resource? And you can plug your own book.
Oh, yes, my book. Well, in addition to my book, which is The Broke and Beautiful Life, I really like blogs. I like them because they're always up to date and they're always current and they're personal. And that's what resonates with me is people's stories. You know, the information is out there on savings and retirement accounts and savings accounts, but unless it resonates with you, you're probably not going to really take any action. And so I follow people. Some people I like are Club Thrifty is one I like. I like Budgets Are Sexy. I like Broke Millennial, Financially Blonde, like you mentioned before, just because they really keep it real. And that's something I try try to do on my site too, because, you know, that's at the end of the day, unless you're connecting the information with some kind of emotion, it's not really going to register into any kind of action.
It's so true. You want to actually see that these are, there's real people with real struggles that are, they're willing to share, which you do such a great job of.
Thank you.
And if you were gifted $10,000 today, no strings attached, what would you do with it?
I know this is super boring, but I would save it and invest it because, you know, in 5 to 10 years, I think I'd like to buy a house, maybe get married, maybe have a family. And I have emergency savings and I have retirement savings, but I kind of like don't have anything for in between. And $10,000 would go a long way in starting that like 5 to 10 year life fund. And maybe I'll take maybe $1,000 or $2,000 to take some awesome trips, but the rest of it I would save and invest boringly.
We've got to turn that around. That makes it be boring. You know what I mean? Like,
well, yeah, exactly. But boring is sexy. That's what I say.
That's the thing that's so hard for, you know, all of us millennial folk to get, is that if you do the boring thing, you're doing the right thing.
Exactly. Because boring frees up all the opportunity for later on down the line.
Oh man, it's such a weird backwards thing, but you just kind of made it just hit me too. Like, this has got to be boring. Great.
Yeah, if it's boring, it's good. Let's say that.
Well, let's get into how you got into this whole world. And I'd love to start for everyone to get to know you a little bit better and understand the Broke and Beautiful Life origin story. So how did it all start for you?
So I decided to major in theater, like a very smart person. And I quickly learned that in the business, things are very unpredictable. And while I was lucky enough to work right out of college on a tour of the musical Cinderella, I didn't make a lot of money, and it was the year 2008, so the recession hit, and I came back to New York unemployed. I couldn't get a job. I thankfully had saved up everything I made from my tour, so I was able to live off of that for a while, but then I was getting job offers for like $200, $300 a week, and I was like, this cannot be, you know, a real sustainable income. This is ridiculous, but this is my job. And so I got to learn how to make this money last. And I started reading up on personal finance, and I read all the big gurus. I read the Susie Orman and, you know, the Millionaire Mind, anything I could get my hands on. And I started to kind of implement those tools and tracking it for myself. And I saw, as I was doing it, everyone around me kind of struggling with those things I had been struggling with. And I was like, wait a minute, I can share this journey I'm on, because it's not a solitary journey. It's something I'm sharing with everybody, whether they're actors or not. A lot of millennials, a lot of young people, people who are struggling in the recession, people who are underemployed and unemployed, people who just want to know how to properly manage their money so they can enjoy their life a little bit more and have a little more freedom from stress. And so I started my blog, The Broke and Beautiful Life, one day at the back of a tour bus. You know, I was on the road with the show, and I just started writing, just kind of musing about my thoughts. And all of a sudden, 2 years later, I became a kind of financial expert and write for wealth management companies and in media sites and for US News and World Report. So it's kind of been this crazy, awesome evolution of a journey. And every day is exciting and new, and money has changed my life in the most positive way. Even though I don't have a lot of it still, I know I'm on my way because I'm taking the right steps, and I got a whole awesome posse doing it with me.
How did you actually learn about finances when you were growing up? What was like your method of understanding?
Well, when I was growing up, I didn't know a lot about money because, you know, like a lot of people, my parents didn't really discuss it really openly or anything, but they were very conscious of spending. Like, they were really good about spending on things that they valued, like education and travel. And then everything else, they were much more conscious of. We didn't get cars or anything. We didn't have the latest technology. Like, certainly my childhood was wonderful and I had so many opportunities, but it wasn't like it was a constant shower of spending. It was always hand-me-downs and everything else. They were very economical. And so I think I got that from my parents, that frugality and consciousness and spending in line with your priorities, which is pretty much at the basis of all smart financial decisions. So that was really helpful starting out. But then going forward and learning about money from there, I think it was not having any money in my salary that was just like, okay, this is my wake-up call. This is my call to action to self-educate. And so I just learned from books and websites and blogs, and I built my financial education from there.
I find it interesting how you mentioned that you looked at Susie Orman or The Millionaire Mindset or like people like David Bach to find your financial advice. Mm-hmm. I did that. I know a lot of people also look to these people who are, you know, 20, 30, 40 years older than them to try and understand finances. And I found that to be extremely stressful and challenging.
Well, yeah, as much as they were helpful in giving me kind of a foundation, I also found that so much of what they were saying wasn't applicable to me, or it was just so far beyond where I needed to focus. And so that's kind of how I started turning to the online world and blogs, because there was more variety in that world and there were more people who could speak to my situation. But even then, the millennial specific financial challenges are something that are very underrepresented. And that's kind of the reason I started writing, because I wanted to try different strategies and then share what I found worked for people who were struggling with things I was struggling with and things that Susie Orman wasn't necessarily talking about. So that's been my big goal in starting The Broke and Beautiful Life, is to kind of emerge as a voice for these specific millennial financial issues.
What would you say is a financial challenge that you were facing when you were first starting out that you feel at this point you've kind of got a handle on it?
I think the biggest thing for me was just not having the money, like, and accepting that was all I could earn. I think people have this idea of, oh, well, you know, once I get my next job, then all my financial problems will be solved. Or once this happens, everything will work itself out. And I found myself getting to be older and older, and not that I'm that old, but, you know, 25, 26, 27, and still waiting for other people to kind of give me the opportunity to get the income I needed to solve my financial issues, quote unquote. And it was then that I realized, well, I can create my own opportunities and I don't have to be restricted to what some one person is going to pay me. I can find other outlets. I can create my own business. There are so many ways to bring in income, and it's not just waiting around. You know, not that I was just waiting around on my bum. I was working for it. But, you know, I was just limited in my mindset on how I thought I could earn. And there's just so many opportunities for earning. And there's so much value I had to offer and everyone has to offer. And it's about learning how to maximize that value and bring income in on your own terms. And so that's kind of what the last 2 years have been about for me.
I completely resonate with what you're saying. And it's kind of like you keep getting a little bit older. And you think, you know, when you're 20, by the time you're in your late 20s, you'll be like, oh, I'll figure out. Money will just take care of itself. Not a problem.
Yeah.
But then suddenly you're like, wait a second. Nothing's changing.
Exactly. And the financial responsibilities just continue to compound, you know. And it's, all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, I'm almost 30. I'll never be able to get a down payment on a house if I'm still making like $0 extra than my expenses. So it's just kind of this thing of like the clock is ticking. What am I going to do to kind of like seize the day and take control of this and empower myself by doing that?
What would you say to someone who is in a position right now where they haven't really looked at all their finances right now? They don't really know how much they owe. They're completely overwhelmed and they feel like it might be a little bit too late for them, even though it never is. But what would you say to that person on how they could really get started?
The very first thing you have to do is get grounded in the numbers. The numbers are your reality, and the sooner you own up to them, the sooner you can change your reality for the better. So I am vigilant about tracking everything I earn, tracking everything I spend. If you have debt, you know, making a list of the debt, who you owe it to, what the balance is, what the interest rate is. And then once you start listing everything, you can see what action you can take to get to where you want to be. But if you keep hiding from it, it's just going to continue to compound and get bigger and bigger and more daunting until it's totally crippling. As opposed to when you take action, you've already empowered yourself by taking that first step. So, you know, just confronting it head on, looking at it all on paper is really important too, because I think people have an idea of what they think they owe, or they think they spend, or they think they earn. But until you are seeing it down into the numbers, getting grounded into the numbers, you really can't take those first steps of empowerment.
That is so powerful. And I know I have a couple of friends that are recent graduates. Some of them live in the States, some of them live in Canada, but they graduated and they haven't yet even looked at how much money they owe for their student loans, because it's so big and it's so
scary.
Sad. Like, if you have a process, what do you know it's going to be a bad bill? Or you know, you screwed up, or, you know, it's terrifying to look at that. Do you have a process of, like, maybe you have a glass of wine, or maybe no one's around and you just cry? Like, what would you do if it's going to be bad?
Yeah, I think it's okay to have that moment. It's okay to have that moment of the cry and the wine and the scream and whatever it is you need to do to, like, let that emotional release out. But once it's out, you have to kind of take out the emotion, strip away the emotion, and approach everything from a logical point. Because, you know, the emotion is important. It will motivate you. But until you start taking those positive action steps, it's all going to be the negatives. And you want to get those negatives out so you can move forward in this totally just numbers frame of mind. And once you have it all listed and you just logically say, okay, this is the interest rate, this is the payment, this is the date it's due, you know, you can take it's like a business, you know, and you don't really think about being scared, or you don't think about anything else. You just do what you have to do to make the business work. And then once you start taking those positive steps, hopefully you can bring those emotions back in a positive way to help motivate you to the end goal.
Exactly. And I mean, I just find that to be incredibly helpful advice, because it is just black and white. It's numbers. And once you know where you're at, it's okay. Now you can ask for the help, or now you can, you know, go to the Broken Beautiful Life, Google search, how do you lower your phone bill or something like that.
Yeah.
And start, at least get moving onto it. I'd love to ask you about your freelance career, because I don't know anybody who's not side hustling right now. Literally everyone is thinking about it or doing it. And you've been able to navigate getting paid $30 an article to now being able to sustain yourself for guest blogging and posting. So how did you figure out your journey in being a freelancer?
You know, I totally won it. I have got to admit, like, it took me about a year to go from $30 posts to posts in the hundreds of dollars and thousands of dollars. And what I found was effective was, first, producing really quality content, no matter how much I'm getting paid, and being really professional about it, being on time and promoting the work once it's posted, so that I am not only delivering the best quality, but people are seeing that. You know, every time I write a freelance piece, that's a new opportunity for me as a writer to be exposed to a new circle of an audience and a new circle of other financial professionals who know this other person's blog or this corporate blog or whoever I'm writing for. And then the other piece of that puzzle was pitching. I am coming from an acting background, so I have no problem with being rejected. I'm like a master at rejection. And I will say that, like, I think that the reason I've been able to be so successful is because I don't let the fear of rejection hold me back. I will pitch, and I will take as many no's as I need to get the yes. And now I have enough yeses that I am just swimming in opportunity, and it is so exciting. And now it's just a big ball of momentum that's just more and more yeses. And at first it was slow, yeah. But in a year, I was able to completely change what opportunities were available to me just by being relentless and being good quality content and totally persistent in the pursuit.
I can totally tell you're that person who's not giving up.
No, Absolutely not. I was like, if I could do it, if I made it as an actress as much as I have, I can make it as anything.
Yes. Yeah. An actress in New York.
Yeah. Nothing will be as hard as that.
Do you have any advice for, say, you know, there's someone listening right now that they work in a full-time job, but they have this great fashion blog on the side, and they think, you know, I got something really cool here. I really want to start pitching this to a magazine or this other blog that I think they could actually pay me. Do you have any advice for where they could maybe find a template or maybe, you know, somebody who can tell them how to pitch?
Yeah, well, you know, I love Google. Google is like my world. I have Google everything, like how to fold a fitted sheet to like how to pitch to Cosmopolitan, to like everything. So that's always a good starting point. And then I also try to find writers that I know or like whose work I have seen elsewhere. And at this point, I've created a lot of connections within the writing and the blogging community, which I think is a really important part of somebody who wants to become a freelancer and who wants to become a writer, is to get involved in the community and help out in the community and take and give in equal measure at least. And I have to say that a lot of the advice I get now, or if I'm seeking advice, comes from other writers and other bloggers that I've developed these relationships with. And I honestly have to say that a good deal of my jobs have also come from those people. So I think getting involved in the community and knowing who's out there, knowing whose work you like and admire, and then building relationships with those people and then seeking out their advice and then helping them in return, that's the way to really learn from the people who are actually doing it.
And also, it's really clear that it's not something, you can't just go from 0 to 100 immediately. You put in the work, everyone knows you in the financial blogging space. And yeah, now things are really starting to accelerate for you.
Absolutely.
I got to ask you about investing, because I feel like it's something that women don't talk enough about. And I know in my circle of friends, we're all talking about it, but no one's really like, I'm investing here and doing this.
Yeah.
So I'd love to ask your experience of understanding investing and how you got started.
So my view on investing is this, back to this idea of keeping it boring. So investing is a long-term game. You know, my philosophy is such that I'm not going to be beating out the guys on Wall Street. I'm never going to be that investor. You know, those guys do it full time. And even then, most of the time, they're not beating the market. So my approach is very passive. And I like to put my money into a well-diversified index fund that follows the market. Like, I personally like the Vanguard Total Stock Market Index Fund. I also use the Vanguard Total International Stock Index Fund. You also have those target retirement date funds. And what they do is they kind of just diversify everything for you, and then they just follow the market. And with the target date funds, they mix up your asset allocation for you to change your risk over time as you near retirement. So it's a very hands-off policy. I just keep putting the money in and let it sit, because over time, the market generally over every 10-year period for the most part has like something like a 7 to 8% return. And that has been true in my investments. I started investing in 2009, and obviously the market is way above where it was in 2009 after the crash. And people, even, you know, who were invested before the crash, if they kept their money where it was, if they just set it and forget it, they would see huge gains. So that's kind of my policy: set it and forget it and let it grow.
And were you hesitant at all to get into it, or did you do a lot of research before, or how did you kind of figure out, I'm doing this?
Yeah, I knew that I needed to invest if I wasn't going to lose my money to inflation. And I think that's the problem. I think people see investing as something that's a risk, but the bigger risk is to just let your money sit in a checking account or under your mattress or wherever, just losing all of its value at, you know, 1-3% inflation every year. You know, that money becomes less and less powerful. So if I take the quote-unquote risk of investing in the stock market, where I've historically seen a 7 to 8% return, well, that's not really a risk at all. That's just the smart thing to do. And the way I learned that was through, I read Investing for Dummies. And then, you know, I just went ahead and did it because that's what I needed. I also like Khan Academy. I don't know if you've heard of it. I think it's K-A-H-N Academy. It might be K-H-A-N.
Either way. I'll check it out though.
Yeah, it's really excellent. It's like 10-minute videos that are narrated, and this guy, Sal Khan, he explains everything in very plain English. So suddenly it's not really scary with all the, you know, when you turn on TV and they're like squawking about stocks and like the market, this and this and this. You're just like, what is all this noise? This guy just keeps it really real, really simple, really concise. And he breaks all the lessons down. And he has lessons on everything from finance to art history. But I really dove into the finance section just to kind of get a vocabulary for understanding the fundamentals.
Right. That is so, so helpful. Wrapping up, like time has been flying by. Just everything you say, I'm like, wow, everyone needs to hear this.
All right, let's make that happen.
I will definitely make that happen. I like to, when I care about something or really believe in someone, I'm like, everyone has to know about this person.
I would love to spread this message. If I could get everybody talking about what we're talking about, it would make me so happy.
You're giving me ideas of like flying you to Canada. Oh my God, I need to just take a minute. Okay.
So, we'll get there someday. We'll get there.
Oh, yes, we will. So, Stephanie, if you could go back and tell yourself one piece of money advice when you were first starting out in your career, what would you tell yourself?
I think it would go back to that idea of what I was talking about in not being limited and not waiting for other people to allow me the opportunity to earn and feel empowered, and just kind of taking the reins, creating my own opportunities, allowing myself to believe in myself enough to know that I can do it and I don't need to wait for permission from anybody else. And everything that I dream of is totally a reality as long as I stay grounded in the numbers and in the goals.
For listeners that have really stuck with listening to you, they're like, I can't stop. Got to keep going down the Stephanie rabbit hole. Well, actually, first, what's one action that you would request that a listener makes to help themselves get into better financial shape?
Track your spending and your earnings. As soon as you see the numbers on paper, it will change. You will just be so, so surprised. People are like, I don't have the money for savings. I don't have the money for retirement. I say, you write down everything you spend for a month. You go look back on everything you wrote down. And I promise you, you will find your savings account in there somewhere. You know, I've done this exercise with people and they say that same thing. And then I take a look at their spending and I say, hold on a minute. That was $300 in bar tabs and coffee. I just found your savings account. You know, it seems so little at the time, but it really does add up. And I know might be cliche to say with the latte factor and everything, but it's true. It's all those little things. They really do make a difference.
And how can people connect with you or hire you? What's the best way?
So I have my website, well, my blog is thebrokeandbeautifullife.com. And I also have a personal website that's kind of a landing page for all the things I do, acting, writing, speaking. I have my book, and that is stephanieoconnell.com. I spell it with an F though, S-T-F-A-N-I-E. And if you Google me, you'll find me. I'm on Twitter at Broke and B-E-A-U. I'm on Facebook at The Broke and Beautiful Life. I'm everywhere. So, you know, take a look, reach out. I'm happy to help. And I love talking to people and I love spreading this message. So let's make it happen.
Absolutely. Stephanie, thank you so much for your time today. It's been amazing to talk to you and share this advice.
It's such a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening. To find more interviews and tips to help you make Mo Money, go to momoneymoprogress.com.